Well, good morning. This morning, as has been mentioned, I'm going to be relating to you some of the work that is going on in Peru. And I'd like to start in the book of Acts, Acts chapter 14, verse 26, where Paul is speaking, or Luke is recording part of Paul's work, and he says, "From there they sailed to Antioch," in verse 26, Acts 14, 26, "where they had been commended to the grace of God for the work which they had completed. And when they had come and gathered the church together, they reported all that God had done with them and that he had opened the door of faith to the Gentiles." And so we see Paul made it a habit to let brethren know what was going on in other places. And then if you look in the next chapter, in Acts chapter 15 and verse 3 says, "So being sent on their way by the church, they passed through Phoenicia and Samaria, describing the conversion of the Gentiles, and they caused great joy to all the brethren. And when they had come to Jerusalem, they were received by the church and the apostles and the elders, and they reported all things that God had done with them." I think when you're talking about work in other places, you need to keep in mind that, as Paul wrote to the Corinthians, I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. And, I really never had many plans or any plans to go to Peru. That really started back in 2000 with these two young men. The one on the right is Emilio Lersundi, and then his cousin is on the left, Antonio or Tony Flores. And they had come to Abilene to study, and there was kind of a mix-up in the International Relations Office, and they didn't have a place to stay. So we had an empty nest at that time. Our youngest had just graduated from high school and moved off to college. Phil was already in college. So we said, "You can come help fill the nest if you need a place to stay." So they did. And at that time, I actually was going to Nigeria, West Africa. And after 9/11, it became unsafe for me to go to that area of Nigeria because we were working in predominantly a Muslim populated area in Nigeria. And again, I spoke no Spanish, had no plans of going anywhere else. But when Emilio and Tony returned home, they asked if I would come and help them. At that time, there was one non-institutional church in the country of Peru. And I told them, "Well, I don't speak Spanish." And they said, "That's okay. We'll help you out and we'll translate." And so that's what kind of started the work there in Peru. Now, Peru is located on the western coast of South America. It's a country of about 20 to 25 million people. About half of the population lives in the capital city of Lima. Lima has about 10 million people that live in it. And you can tell it's bordered by Ecuador and Colombia on the north. To the east is Brazil and Bolivia, and then to the far south is Chile. And so it's surrounded by all those familiar names. You've probably heard of them before. And when you think of Peru, everybody thinks of llamas and the people in the mountain area. And there are some interesting sights there. On my first couple of trips to Peru, we did see a little bit of the country and part of the Andes area. This is called the Sacred Valley, and there's lots of interesting things that are located, old Incan ruins. Peru has been heavily influenced by the Incans, and then Francisco Pizarro came from Spain and conquered the Incans, and basically it became a Spanish controlled country, and so there's a lot of Spanish influence there as well. And so you've got really several regions in the country. You've got the coastland, you've got the mountains, and then you have the jungle on the east, and the mountains are quite high. This peak is over 20,000 feet high, and they've got, I believe, 30 peaks that are over 20,000 feet high. I'm standing at 14,000 feet when I took this shot. These are considered tropical mountain ranges because you'll see wheat growing at these altitudes. So it's a beautiful country. And then you've got to the east of the mountains, the jungle region. And, of course, everyone's been familiar with a lot of the Incan ruins, and this is probably one of the most famous tourist shots in Peru, and so I was able to see that my first trip, and was able to take some pretty good shots, but wasn't there really to do tourist kind of stuff. Got that out of my system, and that was about 20 trips ago. So haven't been back to Machu Picchu since 2003, which was really when I first went, was January 2003. And again, this just shows the different regions. You've got some of the driest deserts in the world are located on the coast of Peru. And the city of Lima, it never rains in Lima. So extremely dry. Many of those areas have less than an inch of rain a year. And then you've got your mountainous region. The Andes run through Peru. And then on the far east in the green area, that's the jungle region. And actually the Amazon River begins in Peru and then flows on in to Brazil from Peru. And this is where the city of Lima, the capital of the country, is located. Now, when the Incans controlled Peru, the capital was in Cusco, which is not too far from Machu Picchu, some of those famous ruins. But now, it's located on the coast, and again, Lima is a very large city. Again, a city of about 10 million people. Very crowded, a pretty modern and up-to-date city now. Although, throughout the city, you'll see a lot of poverty that still exists in that area. You've got really two extremes. Now, there is a middle class that's been emerging over the last 10 years or so, but basically, when I first started going, you were either extremely wealthy or extremely poor in Peru. But that's beginning to change some, and housing just goes up everywhere. I shudder to think what's going to happen when the next major earthquake comes along, because they do have earthquakes quite frequently, but fortunately, all of them have been fairly mild in the last 10 years that I've been going there. And again, just people everywhere you look, and then you'll see the Spanish colonial influence, and the predominant religion in Peru is Catholicism. And so you'll see really some pretty spectacular architecture, the Catholics really want to impress folks with their cathedrals, and a lot of people are drawn to any group that has an impressive looking building. These are just some of the cathedrals. This is the main cathedral that's located in the Plaza de Armas in Lima. And the presidential palace and several other government buildings are located around this plaza in Lima. This is the main altar of the main cathedral there. And you just, again, you see a lot of Catholic influence. I thought this was an interesting, this is actually a pulpit that's elevated. And I was taking a picture of what's underneath. And this is supposed to be representative of Satan, and they've got him basically just staked to the ground, and the priest or the bishop then delivers his sermons with Satan under his feet, and that's to give the impression that they've got Satan under control. And I thought that was an interesting sculpture or carving. You'll see people in all of the cathedrals that are praying to all kinds of icons, statues, and the Peruvian brethren really just say these are idols, and they're right in that. That they have been taught from a very young age. I saw school groups that were being brought to the cathedrals to begin to indoctrinate them in Catholicism and encouraging them. They were showing actually these students how to kneel before the Virgin Mary, as they call her, and again, that's taught at a very, very early age. And you have special holy days where they will bring in relics and icons and statues. And am I blocking the view? Can y'all see that okay? Okay. But you'll see lots of icons and relics that the people will gather to worship. And then you will see these confessionals that are located throughout the cathedrals. And you actually see someone that's actually in the confessional at this point, and Tony was showing me the main cathedral, and he was converted out of Catholicism, and so I said, that's a confessional, isn't it? And he said, yeah, that's a confessional. So I asked Tony, have you ever done that? And Tony said, yeah, I have. And then he kind of ducks his head and smiles, and I go, what? He says, I didn't tell him everything. And I said, well, you don't have to. That's between you and God. But I'm sure that's true of most people that go to those confessionals. But the first congregation that I began to work with was located in the Surco district of Lima. And this congregation was actually started about 20 years ago when a brother from Chile came up and worked in Lima in the Chilean embassy for several years and started studying with some of the brethren there. and convince them of what the New Testament pattern was. And so you had a congregation that began, decided to be just, we're going to be a New Testament church. And they broke away from, and this is something that I saw in Nigeria, something that I've seen quite a bit in Peru. They broke away from North American control. North American churches are notorious for going to other countries, and elderships here assume the oversight of works there. And then through money and buildings and that kind of thing and support of the preachers, they exercise quite a bit of control over churches in other countries. And so this was really the first church that tried to break away from that and be just a New Testament church. And since that time, now this is where the church at Surco was located, since 2003, about a year later, some of the brethren decided to start another work, which is about an hour away, in La Perla, and we helped them get that work going, and then another work started up. We conducted some Bible studies in San Juan de Miraflores, and another congregation started up there. And we've studied in Villa Maria, and there's a congregation there now, in Huandoy, in Monte Carlo, and Puente Piedra. So starting with one 10 years ago, now we have six congregations, and two of these, actually, the church in Monte Carlo and Puente Piedra, they have, in the last two or three years, broken away from that North American control. And the preachers were willing to lose their support over their stand for the truth. And so I appreciate men that show that they're more concerned with doing things God's way rather than receiving a North American paycheck. And I really appreciate the works there. But there's been, Phil and I was talking to him, there's been, since 2003, there's now 19 congregations that we are working with. They're in Peru, and 15 of those have started since 2003. And so the work is really, really going well there in Peru. This is, again, the Surco district, and this is where the church first met when I started going in 2003. This individual is actually the father of the young man. This is the young man that lived with us, Emilio. He's Emilio as well. And Emilio is the preacher there, and as been preaching for many, many years for the church there in Surco and doing a really good job at that. And we then took on his support because he was trying to just make ends meet on his own. And so we actually began to support him so he could spend more time in working with the brethren and going to other places, to some of these other new churches, and helping them out as well to get them established. And I had a lot of Bible studies. This was actually Emilio, and his wife is here. Her name is Rosa. And they would conduct many, many studies. And on my first few trips, there's only one congregation. And so we could spend a lot of time in personal studies. Now, in a two-week period, it's kind of hard to get around to a lot of different groups. But we do the best we can. And we'll study with folks at their place of business, and we'll study with them in their homes. And this was an interesting study where we were studying with the grandmother. These two young men came in, two boys came in, and then the dad joined in the study after that. And then we'll baptize folks wherever we can. They use a lot of portable swimming pools where we will baptize them in different areas. That's actually the dad right there that joined the study halfway through, and we ended up taking him to a public swimming pool, and he obeyed the gospel. Yoli was his name. And then the congregation, the second church that started up in Peru, was actually in the La Perla district. And this is that congregation there. They meet in the home of Carlos Saldívar. Carlos is the preacher in La Perla. And when I first started going, and still when I can, I prefer to use a translator. I can converse in Spanish, and I can preach from a script in Spanish, but you got to be careful sometimes, and even working from a script. I was preaching a wedding. I was telling a couple of the brethren here, I was preaching a wedding several years ago, had my script, and they really liked the way that we do weddings here, and so they wanted a similar kind of wedding with the vows and all that. And so when we got to the part, "Until death do us part," the word for death is muerte. And I should have said, "Hasta la muerte no separe," but instead I said, "Hasta la muerta no separe." And so instead of asking the groom to repeat "until death separates us," I asked him to repeat "until the dead woman separates us." So change one letter, it changes the meaning of the whole sentence. So even working from a script, you got to really be careful. Fortunately, he did not repeat after me, and he said it correctly. But again, this is Tony. Tony does a lot of translating for me while we're there. And when we're working with the church in La Perla now, we usually baptize people in Carlos's kitchen. It's where some of that takes place. And this is Carlos and his wife Doris. And this is was a shot. We usually meet at the airport as we're about to go home. And so this shot was taken actually in the Lima airport. And Carlos prepared this delicious dish for us, one of our first trips there. This is called cuy. It is a fried guinea pig. The brethren there, they love cuy. And I noticed when they finished with their cuy, when we were being served this, there was just a little pile of bones left on their plate. When I finished my cuy, it basically looked like when I started my cuy. But this is really a delicacy, and they love their cuy from the mountains. And I'm not going to be talking about all these restaurants, but this is Bom Bom's from the Flintstone cartoon. This was really the first study that we had in the San Juan district, was at the Picanteria Bom Bom's, and had quite a few people that were interested in coming, and we had several that listened intently, and then this is one of those individuals, Segundo, that obeyed the gospel shortly after that, and then a third church started in Lima, in the San Juan de Miraflores district, and this is where they initially met. And Carlos worked closely with this group. You can see that he is teaching Segundo how to lead singing, and Segundo did a lot of the teaching in the first few years there. Then when we had baptisms to perform at San Juan de Miraflores, then it was in the house of one of the sisters that lived next door to where the church met. So we do a lot of baptizing in these portable pools. And this is one of the young men that obeyed the gospel in those first few years there in Lima. And then this is one of the congregations that are in the north of Lima, the church that meets at Puente Piedra, which really means stone bridge. And, you enter this door here and go down this alleyway. Now, this is the house of Carlos Perez. Carlos was one of the ones that was willing to sacrifice his support, and his family rallied around him. His wife took a job, he took a job, and his son actually joined the military every other weekend to help support the family when Carlos lost his support. And so the family supported him and rallied around him, and he was willing to take a stand for the truth. And so he lives in this building right here. And then the church is kind of just a connection to his house where the church meets. So these are the brethren in Puente Piedra in the north part of Lima. And again, this is just a shot of Carlos Perez there. Then the other congregation that's kind of broken away from institutional control is the church in Monte Carlo. This is part of the group. And we usually take, you'll notice there are several gringos that are located in this shot, but I usually go by myself in January. No gringos allowed on that trip because it forces me to speak Spanish most of the time. But then in June or July, we will take a trip with a group from Lubbock. And so this is part of the group that went with us several years ago. And again, this is the church in Monte Carlo. And then there's another congregation that has started in Juan Doy, and this is Ignacio Huaraca, and the church there meets in his home. And so this is part of his family and the gringos again, and several of the brethren that meet in the home of Ignacio Huaraca there in Lima. Now, south of Lima, this is Lima up here. You go south of Lima about 30 miles, and there's another congregation, and I didn't have any shots of them, but there's another congregation that meets in Pucusana, and then you continue to go south, and you get to a little community called Payo that's located in the Lunahuaná district. Again, this is Lima, and then this is the area where we're talking about right here, where those other two churches south of Lima are located. This is on the way to Payo. You go through a valley, and you'll notice how dry it is. Wherever there's no water, it's extremely dry along the coastal region. And this is the little community of Payo. The man who preaches for them is Fausto León. Fausto was working with an orphanage in Ecuador. And actually, it was an orphanage that is sponsored by one of the large institutional works in Lubbock, where we live, the Sunset School of Preaching. You may have heard of that. They were actually paying Fausto to teach school in their orphanage. But Fausto saw something disturbing while he was there. When the American brethren would come, they would gather a lot of children from the street and bring them into the orphanage, as if they were a part of the orphanage. And then when the brethren from the U.S. left, the kids were kicked back out on the street. And Fausto told the director that this is wrong, that this is not right. And the director said, well, see you later, and fired him. And it really caused Fausto to start thinking about what's going on and what kind of setup do we have? What kind of an organization have we formed here? And is it even according to what the Bible teaches? And so he began to search and came to the conclusion that this whole arrangement and this whole organization is not what the Scriptures teach. And so he broke away from that and is now striving. This is part of his family lives in this community, and he's striving to help to establish a church in Pio. But I appreciate his willingness to look for himself at what the New Testament teaches and just determine that that's what I'm going to teach and that's all that I'm going to teach. And so that's in the city of Pio. Now, there's another congregation that we just went to my last trip a month ago up in the mountains in a little area called Wari. Now, on the way to that, I did want to point out a couple things. I have been to this area once before, and I went with Chicho, who's Tony's brother. And I noticed on the way to this area, there was a sign saying there's an archaeological site. And I asked Chicho, I said, what's that? And he said, well, I've never been there, but we can go. So we went. And these are actually called the ruins of Caral. They found them in the early 90s. And what they found is an amazing complex. They have about 18 pyramids that are located fairly close around one another. And what's interesting about Caral is this is the oldest civilization in North and South America. It predates the Great Pyramids of Egypt and is contemporary with the civilizations of Mesopotamia, with Egypt, with China, and India. And so when the first great civilizations were flourishing, Caral basically sprung up out of nowhere. And I watched a documentary. The BBC had a documentary on Caral, and they kept saying, and our guide kept saying the same thing, no one knows where this civilization came from. It's just they just sprung up out of nowhere. And they had all of these building skills already. And no one knows where they came from. And I told Chicho, I said, I bet I know where they came from. And I showed him Genesis chapter 11, where at the Tower of Babel it says, the Lord scattered the people over the face of the earth. And you have, at that period of time, several great civilizations starting up. And I says, I bet you these are part of the people that the Lord scattered over the face of the earth. But I thought that was very interesting that they said, you know, where did these people come from? They came here with building skills for these pyramids, and they don't seem to have any roots in any. They're the first. So they thought that was very interesting. And then if you go on up into the mountains, this is on the way to Wadi. You'll see some really spectacular mountains on the way to there. This was one shot that we were going over a pass, and I said, I'd really like to take a picture of that lake. And so I ran down to the lake and snapped this photo, and I thought I would run back up to the truck, but we're at about 14,000 feet here. And I found out how little oxygen there is at 14,000 feet. But again, this is the Andes, and you'll see the mountain people up here. The Quechuans are the mountain people, and they speak the Quechuan language. And the ladies are noted for their the hats that they wear. She's got a yikya, what they call a yikya, on her back, and they use that to carry their babies or to carry any load of groceries or whatever. So you'll see this scene quite a bit. And that's just a very typical way that they dress up in the mountains. And so we got to Wadi when I went with Carlos Perez and one of the brothers from Puente Piedra, Bartolome. His family is from Wadi. And it's kind of an interesting city. They have a festival that they're famous for called the Fiesta de los Gatos. And that means the Fiesta of the Cats. And that is the main item on the menu in this festival. I didn't try it while I was there. But we start out early in the morning. We got in about 5:30 in the morning, and Bartolome said, it's only a short walk to my family's house. It says 20 minutes. And I said, well, that's not bad. We can do this. Now, Wadi is located at about 12,500 feet. So we start off walking. You can see the sun's just starting to come up. And we keep walking, and you can see we're getting above Wadi. And we keep walking, and you can see Wadi way down there. And about an hour and a half later, we get to this point, and I asked Bartholomew, I said, what is this? He said, well, that's a road. I said, a road for cars? He says, well, yes. I said, where do these cars come from? From Wadi. We could have taken a taxi up here. He said, yeah, but it's not far. And as I was puffing and panting, and everyone else in our party was as well, but an hour and 45 minutes later, we finally arrived where his family lives. And we're at about 14,000 feet at this point. So it took a little while for us just to recover from the walk up there. But we met Bartholomew's family. These are a couple of his aunts that live in this area. And they all came to the Bible study. And there are about five of them had obeyed the gospel about a year ago. And so Bartholomew has been working with them and would like to help them get the church going there. And we took them materials. We took them hymnals, plates for the Lord's Supper, and showed them how they can conduct a worship service. And it was interesting teaching, because here I was speaking in English. This is Helmut Garcia, which preaches for the church in Monte Carlo in Lima. He was translating it into Spanish, but these are the Quechuan people. They're more comfortable with Quechuan. So then Bartholomew was translating it into Quechuan. And so it was interesting. English and then Spanish and then Quechuan. And it's really hard to keep your train of thought when you're getting it translated into two other lessons. But we made it through that. And I think they were encouraged by the teaching. And so this is the group there. And they're anxious to get a congregation started. And Bartholomew actually would like to move back home where he can help them get the church going there in Wadi. And then another area that I'd like to tell you about is the north. There was a young man, the work in the north started when a young man got a tract, actually, that one of his friends or family members had picked up in Lima, took it back up to the north to a town called Paita. David was converted by the Baptist out of Catholicism and was studying to be a young Baptist preacher. And had a pretty good sized group there in Paita, in a town called Paita. Well, David, when he read this tract, saw what I'm teaching still is not right. That this is the truth. And so it had a name of Carlos Saldivar, who preaches in La Perla in Lima. He contacted Carlos. Carlos went up to Paita, studied with David, and David, this is where Paita's located, David obeyed the gospel and then started converting his congregation, and about three-fourths of the congregation was converted to New Testament Christianity. And so that's where the work really started in the north. Now from there, works have started in Sullana, Santa Cruz, Balada, Samba, and then Piura and Catacaos. And so the work in the north is really exploding. This is the town of Paita in the north. And this is just a typical small Peruvian town that you'll find anywhere. This is David and his wife Karina, and then his two children, Marily and Josue. And David was a baker, and he has a wood burning oven that he uses and gets, he got up early every morning to bake and showing us how he gets the bread out and all, but is a gifted speaker and worker for the Lord. And so since that time, we have begun to support David to where he can spend more time working with the brethren there. And actually, the church in Paita is the largest Iglesia de Cristo in Peru at this point. And some of the North American churches that like to control things have tried to make inroads there and offered all kinds of things to the church at Paita, all kinds of medical missions, all kinds of things that they can help them with. And fortunately, David and the brethren there say, take your things that are not in the Bible and you can leave us alone. And I appreciate his willingness to stand for the truth. The church began first meeting in David's home. And then they began to rent a restaurant. This was a restaurant that they rented on Sundays to meet together. Finally, they were able to build them a facility. And then that facility got too small and they had to double the size of that. So the church in Paita is doing very well, and David, again, is a very hardworking young man, and I appreciate his efforts. It's kind of interesting when you teach the class, they first have the worship, and then class afterwards, the kids go to the back of the auditorium, and the adults are in the front, so you kind of got a little bit of competition and noise that's going on there, but the church there in Paita is really flourishing, and they're doing very, very well. Now, when someone wants to obey the gospel, we would go down to the bay that's located. Paita's on the coast. We'll go down to the bay, and we'll baptize folks in the Pacific Ocean there in the bay area of Paita. This is just one of the groups that went down one time when we had some baptisms there, and then you walk back up from there. Now, they're expanding the port. The economy in Peru is doing real well. They're expanding this port area, so we'll not be able to continue to go down there. But in the new half of the building they've added on, they've made a place for a baptistry and hope to have some running water there soon so that they can just baptize there at the building. Soccer is the sport in Peru. And David lives close to a soccer stadium. And I noticed this one day when we were going by, and I asked him, what's going on? He said, well, there's a soccer game going on. I said, and they're watching the soccer game that way? He says, well, they can't afford to get in. So the guys that drive these little motor taxis, when the soccer game's going on, they'll back them up to the wall and stand on top of their motor taxis and watch the game from there. But they love their soccer. Then another congregation I want to tell you about very quickly is the congregation that's located in Santa Cruz. This is on the way to Santa Cruz. A lot of banana plantations and lemon and lime plantations that are located in this area. There's a lot of moisture that they have. It's kind of a microclimate. And then this is the village of Santa Cruz. And this is a typical northern village. This is a study that we had. This was one summer when I took several of the college students with us to a trip there and studying with the brethren there in Santa Cruz. This is Esteban Apreciado, who preaches for the church there. He was one of the first that was baptized in Santa Cruz. And they first met in his home, in Esteban's home. And then they were able to purchase a small piece of land a couple of lots down from Esteban's house. And they were able to actually build them a church building where they now meet in. And so this is some of the brethren and some of the college kids that were with us on that trip. And I can tell you that they're pretty close to the equator, and there's not a lot of ventilation in these buildings. And so when we have a study in the middle of the afternoon, it can get quite warm. They always have question and answers after each lesson. And usually what we would say is, does anyone have any questions? No, they don't do that. After the lesson, then the preacher, Esteban, will stand up and say, now, do you have a question? Do you have a question? And I must confess that I probably didn't have a very Christ-like attitude, because I was burning up and we had already been in there, and I was thinking, oh, please don't have a question. Please don't have a question. So, but we made it through. And then they have an irrigation canal that runs by Santa Cruz, so that's where we do most of the baptizings there in Santa Cruz. This is Brother Julio. Quite a few Julios that are in the congregation there in Santa Cruz, but baptizing him into Christ. When there's an irrigation canal that's not available or a ocean that's not nearby, then we can also baptize in barrels. It works. That's one of the baptisms there. And then this is the church in Sullana. Sullana, this was a Pentecostal church that was converted to the truth. The guy that was preaching for them, his name is Alex Luna, and he obeyed the gospel. He's standing there in the doorway. He obeyed the gospel and then started converting the congregation that he was preaching for. And so the church there in Sullana is doing very well. This is another time that we were meeting with Alex and some of his family to have a Bible study with him. This is actually one of the elders in Lubbock, Laurencio Garduño. And so with a name like that, he's very handy to have with you. He's fluent in Spanish, so Laurencio is able to do a lot of effective work there in Peru as well. This is the favorite mode of transportation for Sullanans. Again, the motor taxi will get you for about 60 cents. You can go wherever you need to go. And if they need gas, they just stop at the local gas station and get a quick fill up and continue on their way. That is gasoline she's pouring in there. This is one of the sisters I wanted to tell you about. This is Sister Lucha. Sister Lucha obeyed the gospel probably about 7 years ago there in Sullana. When she obeyed the gospel, her husband went ballistic. She's not been allowed out of the house since then. She's basically a prisoner in her own house. And so she's not allowed to go to the worship. She's not allowed out of the house without her husband being beside her. Surprisingly, he allows the brethren to come visit with her in her home. But that is Sister Lucha. And really there are laws, but they're really not enforced that could do something about that. And so pray for Sister Lucha. She's really got a burden to bear. But she hasn't renounced her faith, and she refuses to go to the Catholic Church with her husband. But he's determined to keep her a house prisoner since she obeyed the gospel. So pray for Sister Lucha. Then another congregation that started up recently is the church in Samba, which is located about 10 miles from Ecuador. You get there by going in a colectivo, and it just basically consists of, these are not that large cars. You've got two seats in front, which you got the driver then, and then two people occupy the one seat in the front, and then four people occupy the back seat, and then usually up to four people will occupy the very back of the colectivo. And so that's how they get around. And that's what you got to take if you want to go to Samba. And this is where the brethren there are began to meet. It was in the home of Abraham Pintado. And Abraham was one of the first ones that obeyed the gospel in Samba. And there was a connection. David's wife, Karina, her family is from Samba. So in visiting with her family didn't obey the gospel, but some of the neighbors David and Karina studied with did obey the gospel. And that started the church there in Samba. Since then, this is Abraham's house right here. They have built them an adobe church building next door. This is Abraham right there. And we helped them to purchase some chairs and help put a roof on the building for them. And they're doing very well now there in Samba. Then the church in Catacaos. This is Israel Yarleke, who preaches for the church in Catacaos. His home is located. Here's where he lives. And there's a pretty famous market for all kinds of artisan products that's there in Catacaos, located close to Piura. I noticed one day we were visiting Israel, and one of the young men had these out. And I asked Israel, I said, what are those for? And he says, well, you can either have them for pet or you can have them for lunch. So they fry these up, and they eat baby iguanas for kind of a snack. I have not tried that. I haven't been that hungry in Catacaos. But interesting looking creatures. The biologist to me really was fascinated by them. And so here's some of the brethren that we met with in Catacaos. There's a restaurant there. You never know what kind of food you're going to get. And one of the young men that was with us on one trip ordered a hot dog. This is the Peruvian version of a hot dog. That was not what he was expecting, as you can see. But you never know what you're going to get there. Then another area we've studied in is Bocana de Pichones. This is where Carlos's wife Doris is from. One of the sisters was helping prepare lunch for us there. We were able to conduct some Bible studies. This is one of the men that's obeyed the gospel in Bocana de Pichones. His name is Manuel. He's on his faithful donkey Julio with his dog Tony. Manuel drove around the area inviting people to several studies that we were going to conduct. And one of the studies, only way you could get there was on horseback. So that was new. I'd never ridden on horseback to a Bible study. So I got to experience that. And so we conducted several studies there in Bocana de Pichones, and the people there were very appreciative and were able, there have been several that have been baptized now in Bocana de Pichones there in the north of Peru. Then we've studied with other areas around the Talara region. No churches are located there yet, but we're doing what we can. This is a typical scene in the north. You'll see the burros, and this is their form of transportation. So you'll see these all over the north of Peru. And we've studied with quite a few groups there in the north of Peru. And hopefully, and I'm confident that the church will continue to spread. Tony is actually from the north, and so he does a lot of traveling with me to the north and translating for me while we are up in that area. This is the area of Lobitos. This is actually my favorite rock in Lobitos. Tony and his brother are surfers or bodyboarders, so early in the morning they'll get up and we'll go to this area and I'll study on the rock while they're out surfing. And then I was taking a walk through the village of Lobitos one day and came across these kids, and they invited me to come to their school. So I did. I went to their school, met some of the faculty there, found out that this fellow was a fellow biology teacher, and so we had some things in common. And they even lined the kids up And I noticed that kids are kids wherever you go. If you'll notice this over here. I guess that's just universal. That just happens everywhere. So kids will be kids even in Peru. Real quickly, one other area we've worked in is in the area of the jungle, Iquitos. Went there last year. This is actually the Amazon River. And there are two congregations that are located. This is flying into Iquitos, and you can see the Amazon under us. Iquitos is the largest city that is not accessible by land. You can only get there by plane or by boat. And so consequently, not a lot of cars. If you want to go anywhere in Iquitos, it's going to be either in a motor taxi or on a motorcycle. That's how they get about in that town. And like I said, there's a couple of congregations. This is one of the congregations that meets in this fellow's home. We had a study there one morning, and then we went to, this is not the Amazon, this is the River Nanay that is located next to Iquitos. And so a young man wanted to obey the gospel, and so we took him there. Carlos asked me if I wanted to do the baptizing, and I said, aren't there piranha in the water? He goes, yeah, there are, but they won't bother you. I said, well, I'll let you do the baptizing this morning. And they made it out fine. But this is where another congregation meets there in Iquitos. There are actually two congregations now that are in the city of Iquitos. And then another congregation is located in Nueva Jerusalem. This is Nemerlo and his family. He preaches for one of the churches there in Iquitos. They served us breakfast one morning. I ate a lot of bread for breakfast that morning. He showed us what was going to be lunch on Sunday. They get these turtles from the river and I was sure to take jerky and granola for lunch that day. I try to eat what I can, but you have to be careful as well. Now, this is another delicacy. It's the fruit of one of the palm trees that they peel and eat quite a bit. But there's another product that comes from these palm trees that I saw sold in the marketplace as well. This product is sold, and so they'll grill these up for you as well. So these are grubs or worms that live in the palm tree. And if you want some barbecued worms, I've heard they taste really good. I just took their word for it. But just some of you, this is another type of fish called a bagre that lives in the Amazon River that's supposedly a very tasty fish. I didn't get a chance to taste that one either. But then we headed out from Iquitos, across the Amazon River, down the Amazon River a little ways. This is the buses on the Amazon. So if you want to go anywhere, you go by water usually in that area. And they have, you can hire out these buses, or they have those that make regular runs to villages up and down the river. And so you get on these buses and go where you need to go. This is heading into the island where Nueva Jerusalem is located. And there's actually a group of brethren that are meeting there now. And so we were able to spend the day with them, studied with them under the trees, and really were able to encourage them. And they encouraged us as well. So this is the church in Nueva Jerusalem. And then always at the end of a trip, one of the hardest parts of each trip is having to come home. I mean, I'm anxious to get home, so you've got mixed feelings. But I hate leaving the brethren because they just are so uplifted and encouraged by your presence when you come. And they don't want to see you go. So there's always a time. This is actually Carlos and Carlos and Carlos. That came to the airport to say goodbye. And this is Tony and his brother Chicho. I don't know if you can tell, but they are brothers. The gringo's in the middle. But they refer to this shot as Los Tres Flores, the three Floreses. So they've kind of adopted me into their family. It's always, again, very hard to say goodbye. But the church there in Peru is doing so well. And just want to ask for your prayers and your encouragement to the brethren there. They have taken a stand for the truth. They are preaching the gospel. People are responding to the gospel, and the Lord's work is flourishing in Peru. So I thank you for your time this morning and letting me share that with you.